I am honored to be addressing you this morning on the occasion of our annual meeting. At the end of my term on the Board of Trustees, and as we prepare to welcome a new minister among us, this is a good day. And it's a good day to consider the question, where are we going? Midway on the journey of our life, I found that I was in a dusky wood, for the right path whence I had strayed was lost. These are the opening lines of Dante's Inferno. I read it when I was about 16 and have never forgotten those words. Dante used the metaphor of a dusky wood to show that he, the speaker of the poem, had lost his way in life and was searching for new meaning. Looking back, it seems odd that this cry of despair should have resonated so powerfully with a young girl, decades from any midlife crisis. When midlife crises occur, they are often triggered by some event that requires us to recognize that the goals we thought we were pursuing probably are not going to work out. Sometimes it's a job loss or failure to get a promotion. Sometimes it's the death of a family member or friend. Sometimes it's just a long, hard look in the mirror and the realization that not only are you not getting any younger, but that you've already lived half your life or more. As the character Fagin and Oliver realizes after losing all the treasure he had amassed, it's time to review the situation. Sometimes that review requires a reconsideration of who we are and what we want our lives to mean. At my midpoint, for example, I realized that all my life I had been seeking a mentor or guru, someone who would tell me what to do and how to do it. I never found that mentor and eventually recognized that my locus of control needed to be within myself. It was up to me to decide who and what to be and how to accomplish it. Up to me to determine who I was and why. Guidance is helpful and important, but we can't rely solely on others. Midlife crises are supposed to happen when you're around 50. This congregation happens to be around 50. Are we in a midlife crisis? Have we lost our way? Have the plans we made failed to work out? Is it time to review the situation? We lost a member this year, a new member, before he even signed the membership book, because he said he felt that for him, this congregation is too narrow and inward-focused. He did not find what he sought here, a commitment to social justice. Of course, we can't be all things to all people, but what things should we be to what people? Our mission statement tells us that we are a socially and spiritually welcoming congregation of lifelong learners. We embrace social justice, caring for the earth, fairness, and peace. By living our UU principles, we aspire to diversity, compassion, and respect in our lives, community, and world. Our UU principles affirm, and feel free to follow along in your order of service if you wish, the inherent worth and dignity of every person, justice, equity, and compassion in human relations, acceptance of one another and encouragement to spiritual growth, a free and responsible search for truth and meaning, the right of conscience and use of the democratic process, the goal of a world community with peace, liberty, and justice for all, respect for the interdependent web of all existence of which we are a part. One midpoint question would be, do we really believe in those principles? And another harder question would be, what do we mean by living our UU principles? Last year, the Board of Trustees read a disturbing book called The Almost Church Revitalized, Envisioning the Future of Unitarian Universalism by Michael Dural. Dural is a church consultant who has worked extensively with congregations who are concerned about diminishing numbers. His prescription is controversial. He asserts that some of the things we cherish most about UUism, including some of our principles, are actually limiting our growth and making us irrelevant in the communities we claim to serve. Here's Durrell's description of what characterizes UU churches today. Diversity of belief, low expectations of membership and charitable giving, a reliance on reason and intellect, personal autonomy, traditional forms of worship, attempts to be all things to all people, an abhorrence of evangelism, distrust of clergy leadership, an emphasis on the democratic process, a hands-off attitude toward encouraging members to lead lives of dedication, commitment, and when necessary, sacrifice for the common good. How well would you say that defines our congregation? Dural claims there is little on the list that appeals to American church shoppers today. Rather, he claims, they are seeking a church that will challenge their self-centeredness and offer an alternative to consumer-oriented society and its attendant shallowness. Reading Dural's book took me way out of my comfort zone because he called into question some of the qualities that I cherish most about this congregation and, by extension, the rest of our denomination. For example, he says that the UU principle of a free and responsible search for truth and meaning is of questionable value and may be detrimental to future growth. His reasoning is that our primary purpose should be to serve the public good. If we focus on the private sphere, that is, the spiritual journeys of our individual members, we become irrelevant. Our primary focus should lie elsewhere, away from the private sphere, to becoming a public church, one that reaches out to create a more just and humane world. I'm not sure that becoming a more public church, in Dural's terminology, necessarily requires us to forsake any of our principles or the qualities of this church that make us so important to us. I think we can enjoy coming together on a Sunday morning to enjoy each other's company, to stimulate our intellects, to explore and encourage spiritual growth, without forsaking our obligation to the world around us. It can be a both-and rather than an either-or situation. But I do agree with him that we haven't fulfilled our obligation to the larger community, however you define that. Maybe we've become too comfortable together, talking the talk about saving the world and forgetting or minimizing the part about walking the walk. I visited my cardiologist lately, another sign that I've passed the midpoint. He told me my heart is boring. That's good news from any doctor. But he went on to say, and I quote, "Get off your butt and get more exercise." Maybe we as a congregation need to get off our collective butts and focus on putting our principles into action. I wasn't yet part of this congregation when the decision was made to build this building. I can only imagine the vision and courage it took to commit to such a monumental project. There were enormous stresses on the congregation, and not everyone agrees, even now, that it was the right thing to do. But here we are in this beautiful space, and I have to think that there was and is a greater purpose for it than simply to make you and me comfortable and happy on Sunday morning. On September 25th last year, Bob Hughes preached a sermon called "Where Do We Go From Here?" He advised us to begin by looking back to our principles and sources and to reconsider our congregational covenant, which, by the way, is posted on the wall in room 113 if you haven't looked at it lately. It urges us to practice civility and respect. Then he recommended that we commit ourselves to service. Quoting John Kennedy's famous injunction, "Ask not what your country can do for you, but what you can do for your country." He reminded us that giving, whether of time, treasure, or talent, is part of our spiritual growth. We should practice what we preach, he told us. Be the change we want to see. And he asked us to reflect on several questions. How can we be intentional about building community? How can we reconnect to nature? How can we maintain humor and optimism, humility and balance? These are really good questions. I would add, what do we have going on here besides a building and enjoying each other's company? How do we walk the walk? How do we actuate our principles? How do we support everyone's spiritual growth? How are we making the world a better place? In the building? On Elmer Durr Road? In Frederick County? In the region? In the nation? And on the planet? What are the areas of our lives we want to give ourselves to, individually and as a congregation? I don't think we need to go very far to find some possibilities. The UUA focus this year is on immigration. That issue has some currency in Frederick and the country. We are currently running a 6-week series of friendly forum programs devoted to immigration. The big question will be, now what? What happens when we combine our knowledge with our energy and commitment? We celebrated a few months ago when Maryland passed the Equal Marriage Act. Now, how will we react to the current ballot initiative to overturn that act? And how can we shift the pernicious attitude in this country that civil rights should be subject to state-by-state voting? If that had been the case in earlier times, there are some states in this nation that might still support slavery and anti-miscegenation laws. Climate change and environmental degradation have the potential to dwarf all other issues we face as humans on this planet. Here at UUCF, we have a very small, very dedicated group of very tired people trying to save the earth while the rest of us stand around and applaud them. They'd probably rather have a few more helping hands. I could go on, but you get the idea. In our 50th year, this congregation has overwhelmingly chosen to seek a full-time minister. It wasn't an easy choice and required a fundraising effort that some of us thought would be impossible to achieve. But we did it. We blew the top off that chart in the atrium that recorded our pledges. What does that say about us? And what do we expect for our money? It goes without saying that we expect the minister to be able to walk on water, and I'm sure that that was the first requirement for the search committee. As Pastor Bob warned us in his final sermon, however, we need to be realistic. Not even the most wonderful minister will be able to fulfill all our hopes and expectations. Nor should he. And we can assume that our new minister will have hopes and expectations too. How well will we fulfill those? Whatever hopes and expectations on either side, we can't rely on a minister to tell us who we are or to do the work for us. That job is up to us. We need to decide what this congregation means in the world. With or without a minister, who are we? For what reason do we have this building? Is it enough simply to enjoy each other's company? To find intellectual and spiritual stimulation? To buy free trade coffee? Michael Durrell says, no, that's not enough. He urges us to raise our expectations about the importance and meaning of membership in a UU congregation. I ask you to think about what membership here means to you and to set specific goals for yourself about what you can give of your time, treasure, and talent, your commitment, leadership, and compassion to make UUCF the place you think it should be. If you're wondering what difference your effort could make in saving such a broken world, let me close by sharing the story of the starfish. An elderly man was walking along the beach. He saw that a storm had washed up onto the sand thousands of starfish, all now dying in the sun. Then he saw a little boy picking up the starfish, one by one, and gently returning them to the safety of the sea. The man said to the boy, "Why are you bothering? Can't you see there are thousands of starfish dying here? What possible difference can you make?" The little boy picked up another starfish, tossed it into the sea, and said to the man, "It made a difference to that one." As members and friends of UUCF, about to reconsider our purpose in the world, let's try to be more like the little boy and less like the old man. Thank you.